I was always interested in the future, as far back as I can remember. I drew airplanes and cities of the future, and underwater cities, and floating cities.
Jacques Fresco is a self-taught scientist, architect, and inventor. For his entire life, he has been deeply committed to investigation, insight, and innovation. A prolific creator and builder, Jacques has been redesigning our entire culture for most of his life. Jacques Fresco doesn't want to just talk about what today will be like tomorrow. He has a plan to build an entire new world from the ground up.
Hello, this is Jerry Pippin, and you're listening to the soundtrack of a documentary called Future by Design. That was director William Gusecki, and he is talking about a modern-day Da Vinci, Jacques Fresco.
Are you betting that people will not declare war on each other so that you can get at building all of this?
Well, we don't have much choice. We're going to destroy each other, or we're going to make it.
When you try to think about the future, remember this. The process with which you think about things is based upon indoctrination, what you're given by your society. So your range of thought is limited by the dominant values of your society.
We talk about civilization as though it's a static state, and there are no civilized people yet. It's a process that's constantly going on. As long as you have war, police, prisons, crime, you're in the early stages of civilization, what they call civilization.
All the marvels and wonders of technology can amount to nothing unless it elevates humans to their highest potential. This is the aim of the future by design.
That was a little more of the soundtrack from that documentary, Future by Design. Let's go ahead and get going with the show and talk to our guests, William Gusecki and Jacques Fresco. William, how are you today out there in Hollywood? Actually, Venice, huh?
Yeah, well, we're pretty good out here in Hollywood. The weather's nice today. I can't say that I am always thrilled with all the news that I hear about how the world's going.
Yeah, we're going to get into that, and that's one of the reasons we're doing this show. On the line also from Florida, we have Jacques Fresco. And Jacques, how's Florida?
Oh, it's very pleasant. As far as I'm concerned.
And, you know, we'll get into why we have Jacques on the phone here in a minute, William. But first of all, I became acquainted with your work originally, I think, on that documentary back in 2000 that you did on Waco.
Right. Yeah, it was actually 1997 that we finished that film on Waco. And I just got a call this morning, somebody looking for where to buy it. So it's still a popular film, and it was a pretty monumental event in my life. I think that unraveling the Waco story was a worthwhile and challenging effort that still, you know, rattles around in my mind as something that, I don't know, it's a historic milestone of sorts.
Yeah, you were nominated for Best Feature with that.
Yeah, I was nominated for an Oscar for that, yeah.
Back in 1997. And one of the other things that you did was a long time ago, but it had excellent sound, and the Academy recognized that. That was The Rose.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, The Rose. The Rose was a project that I spent it's very similar to Waco in my own life history. It was a project I spent a lot of time on. It was a piece of work that I was proud to have worked on. I learned a lot working on it. And it became yet another milestone in certainly in Bette Midler's career. And the song, The Rose, has become a standard and is still played on the radio.
No doubt about it. And you were the sound engineer, huh?
I was the associate producer and I was the chief sound engineer.
Yeah, so when we play The Rose a little bit in one of our bumpers, don't be surprised. Why? you've done a lot of interesting things here over the years. Some of them, eclectic, I guess, is the best term to use, but then they're kind of intertwined, really, if you stop and analyze conspiracies and a better world and better ideas. You did some things on crop circles.
Yeah. Well, it's been a search, you know. I mean, part of the era, I think, within which I've grown up is, you know, I'm just part of that generation that seems to seek the truth and want to know, you know, what's going on and want to know, you know, how to make things better.
Now that we've set the stage here, what gets you interested in this? I mean, the Jacques Fresco has a dream, an idea, something that he's lived with forever, and you decided to make a documentary about him.
Well,
I thought before, I didn't mean to give you a chance to answer here, but I always compared him to Buckminster Fuller in many ways.
Well, as you know from watching the film, he met Bucky Fuller when he was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And so there, it's funny how these things kind of, it's hard to explain. You know, it's just like my life as well. Your life goes along this path, and it seems to, I'm not saying it's predestined or anything like that, but there seems to be these synchronicities that occur when people meet up or travel along or follow along and these parallel paths. And like I said, you know, I've always been interested in making things better, and I've always been interested in how, you know, human potential is something that I got involved in when I was very, very young, in the early 1970s, and the whole notion of the human potential is how can we be the most that we are, or the most that we can be. And that's a really simple fundamental, but it can go throughout pretty much everything you do in your life. And so Jacques definitely represents, you know, a side of the human potential that I immediately, you know, resonated with and wanted to know more about.
Well, Jacques, we're going to bring you in on the conversation. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you were contacted by this high-powered Hollywood producer?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, how did that happen?
I think we met at an individual's home, and he was very interested in sponsoring this particular documentary, and that's when I met William.
And did you think, hey, this guy would be great to make a movie about my ideas at the time, or it was just a passing?
It's just passing. I didn't know whether it would terminate in the documentary.
You let's get into some of your career here. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself? You retired in Florida, but did you work in Florida before you retired?
I did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I think I came into many of these ideas during the Depression, the Great Depression. I was moved by many different things. And when I saw 15 million people unemployed, and after the banks failed, people lost their homes, and I know that there was goods in the stores, that most people didn't have the money to buy things. And that was that time that made me quite aware of the fact that our social institutions have not moved as technology has. There's been great strides in electronics and chemistry and physics and botany, but very little movement in terms of politics.
Now it's interesting you would bring that up, and William, I'm going to bring you in this conversation too. I was talking to Larry Dickin, my executive producer, about an hour ago before we did the show, about this show, and we were talking about, well, how are we going to get a world that is shown here in future by design? And I said, basically, I guess we're going to have another terrible calamity like a depression or something to wake people up. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not very optimistic until people have to do things. It's kind of willy-nilly, our development, don't you think? I mean, we just kind of... We need a future by design, is what I'm saying.
Yes, it'll only come after a major collapse. Other than that, people will not change. In fact, they get used to things, and they just think they can vote someone else in that can solve the problems. It cannot be solved politically. The problems are technical in nature and humane and environmental.
Now, I believe you're what? You're 90 years old now?
91.
Oh, okay. Well, made you a little younger than you are. So you've seen a lot in this world, and I think people need to put a little weight to what you're saying. Don't you agree, William, that people only change with calamity?
Oh, yeah. No, it's kind of what I was alluding to when we first started this conversation is that, I have a lot of concern. I agree that major change is only going to come about precipitated by some other major change.
We will be right back, and we're going to get into some of these things that William was just talking about with the architect himself, the future by design, Jacques Fresco. So don't go away. I want to take a moment to talk to you about astrology. We all enjoy reading astrology in the newspaper, love, life in general. But I want to talk to you about C.C. Stevens. She's in Arizona, and she is really a top-notch astrologer. And she does something a little different, and I think you should know about it. She offers to her customers the Book of You for only $35. Literally, this is a book about you. I don't really have time in a radio commercial to go into all of the details of why you should consider ordering the Book of You. So I urge you to click on this banner that's on this page with the show and check it out. And you can order it for $35. Check, credit card, whatever. This is a great gift idea, too, so order now.
When the night has been too lonely and the wrong has been too
William Gusecki, noted Hollywood documentarian and producer. In addition to that, sound engineer, The Rose, as we played the bumper. That was your work, right, William?
Oh, it sure was.
And on the line from Florida, we have the architect of Future by Design, the DVD we're talking about, and the documentary, and, of course, Jacques Fresco, 91 years old. And as we went to the break, Jacques, we were talking about human nature. It just doesn't seem to change, but it has to.
Well, human nature always changes, but we don't pay much attention to that. It's really the conditions that surround a human being that keep them fairly uniform. In other words, the headhunters of the Amazon don't change very much because there's not much outside influence. Our particular culture, our schools, our universities, all of them are so designed to maintain the established order.
Now, one of the things I noticed in the documentary, William, and also Jacques, is the fact that you're suggesting that you can build buildings automatically? In other words, you don't need a whole lot of human labor?
No, this is happening all over, not just in building, but in industry. You see the automobile factories have these robots that lift up the cars, paint them, turn them over, move them. Human beings are being moved out.
So what kind of impact is that going to have on society in general? I mean, we're going to have to figure out some way. Right now, it's kind of a dog-eat-dog world, and we're, if you make the money, great. If you don't, too bad. That won't work if nobody's working. And we're going to have to change our ideas, aren't we?
That's why the system is going to collapse, because it has no ability to plan for the future. It doesn't have that kind of ability. I know of no society that ever planned for the future. They try to keep things as they are. I'm talking about all societies. And I feel that, of course, all nations and all societies are inherently corrupt.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. In other words, the human psyche is, hey, we're doing okay. Maybe we don't need to change.
Right, exactly. This is true all through history.
Now, William, what? This is a complicated subject. What made you think that you could put it into a DVD? And by the way, you did well with this documentary. You succeeded.
I was introduced to Jacques by a mutual friend of ours. And, of course, when you first get to know Jacques, what you get to know first is what you see, which is his designs and his buildings and his cars and things like that. And so that's what I saw. I saw Jacques' beautiful work. I had no idea when I started working on the film how sophisticated his concepts were in terms of the world and in terms of social change. So part of it was a challenge for me. Part of it was, there's a lot more to this than just pretty buildings and smart ideas about manufacturing and things like that. There's an underlying concept of social transformation or social operation, if you will. And Jacques made it clear to me that that was very important to him in terms of it's not just about building things and inventing things. That's how he started, as an inventor. But where it went was, how do we make it all work at a social level as well as at an engineering level? And I think that's where the rubber meets the road, is combining. We have lots of tech talk these days. There's lots of talk about, you know, new forms of technology and new ways to do things, and that's all well and good. But as we say in the film, and as I believe, if the technology does not contribute to the betterment of everyone, why bother?
You got a good point there. The thing, you know, human beings are deviant in nature, and if you get this society, I mean, you're going to have to change the whole thing, Jacques. I don't know how you're going to deal with greed.
You want me to answer that?
Yeah.
Okay. If you live near a waterfall, clear water running downhill, if there's an abundance of water, nobody steals it. You understand that? It's only when water is scarce that you can sell it.
Okay. Yeah, so you're saying...
If you have a scarcity in society, there will be crime. If you have a monetary society where there is the rich, the poor, and when the majority or the so-called powerful nations control most of the world's resources, you're going to have trouble, no matter how many laws or treaties you sign or enact.
Yeah, well, I was talking earlier to Larry Dickin, our executive producer, about this, and I said something to the effect, and I want to see what both of your reactions are to this, how we get around this. Even if we had a society where we all were not lacking, but had all the essentials, and even if we had a society where we can have a dream, where if I wanted to live on a high rise and on Park Avenue, or there in Century City in California, or a mansion on a hill someplace in South Carolina, or a farm in Kansas, if everybody had what they wanted, you'd still have people that would want more. How are we going to diffuse that idea?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, the assumptions that people keep taking more than they need, this does not occur in an abundance. If you live around an orange trees, you only pick so many, just as much as you need. In fact, our major concern is the making of a motion picture called And the World Will Be One. It is this motion picture that will provide people with the direction that will produce a sustainable global society. It's the motion picture that will introduce the change. Without that film, if we have a social collapse, it will only go back to either a dictatorship or a repeat of the same series of events.
Yeah. In other words, William, what he's saying here is, what Jacques is saying is, and I agree with this to some sort, at least to a 90 or 80, 95% probability. We are a society now that follows the leader as far as the media is concerned. In other words, motion pictures do set the standards. Lots of people can say things in motion pictures that 20 years before just weren't acceptable.
Yeah, I think they can be an agent for social change. I think that this has been one of Jacques' dreams for a long time, because he has a strong desire to communicate the work that he has spent so much time on. And I will say that I wish there were a lot of things I wish I could have put in the film about Jacques' work that I couldn't. And one of them is the degree to which he has spent many, many years working with behavior and the whole notion of how our environment, and I don't mean just the physical environment, I mean the entire world in which we grow up, in which we live.
Yeah, you're talking about beliefs and base prejudices, everything.
Yeah, exactly. The entire social structure influences who we are. and that if you change that, and he has acid tested this with animals as well as with people, that if you change the environment, you can modify behavior to a degree to where aberrant behavior or destructive behavior is simply sort of cooked out of the system because there's no stimulus for it, there's no cause for it. And I have seen that this is a very interesting part of this whole equation of, and I agree that the first place you go is, how do you change people from being greedy? That's basically the bottom line. How do you change that? And I must say that even, I will say that even my own son, I have a son who's 13 and a half years old now, and one thing we have done since the day he was born is we have, and I mean every moment, we have essentially met his needs, basically, in a very careful manner, in a very sort of modern manner, you know, modern parenting. And I must say that I have a son who's a young teenager now, and he wants for nothing. There is nothing. You ask him, what do you want for your birthday? Oh, nothing. I've got everything I want. What do you want for Christmas? Oh, nothing. I have everything I need. Now, I must say that, a lot of that is behavioral. He wasn't necessarily born that way. He's that way because he has essentially lived in a world, as far as he's concerned, a world of abundance. And so I got to say that Jock's philosophy really, I think, does test out that if you live in a world of abundance from birth and you're treated well, you know, you're not abused psychologically, I suspect that the people would, in fact, grow up. I mean, that's the whole concept of the Garden of Eden to begin with. That people would, I think if people's needs were met in all the different ways that are real needs, both physical and emotional, that we would grow, we could in a couple of generations literally grow a world where greed and avarice and aggression just simply cease to be dominant as they are now. You always have your exceptions to the rule, but I think we breed greed in the world that we have now because of you have the haves and the have-nots. And of course we all know there's more have-nots than there are haves, and it's the have-nots that want more. And this whole concept of less and more and rich and poor is as Jacques will tell you, is arcane. It's old-fashioned. It's an old-fashioned way of running society that simply is not necessary.
We were talking about that before we got on the phone with both of you, and I'm inclined to agree with what you just said, but there are exceptions. Look at the super rich today. They seem to want more. But then again, we can trace this back for the last 50 years. Jacques was talking about the Great Depression, and it took us 50 years to get where we are now, more or less. It's 70 years by now, but I think the last couple of decades, the die's been pretty much cast the same way. What I'm getting at is the media, and I guess the rich and the famous type shows, and I'm not picking on that particular show particularly, inbreeds this social thing that I find is just tragic in today's society. All these young kids from 15, 14 to 25, see how the rich and famous live, and they all think they can get there, and the deck is stacked against them. And you got to change that. And I don't know, Jacques, can you change that in two or three decades?
No, it wouldn't take that long, actually.
Oh, really?
With motion pictures, we can affect change very rapidly. For example, years ago, when I was first working on this overall plan, I said, how do you know you can change other nations, their customs, their values, their religious beliefs, their marital arrangements are so different than ours, how can you bridge the difference between these nations? And the methods that we use is we emphasize those areas that we have in common to start with. For example, all people need clean air, clean water, arable land, a relevant education, security, medical care, from birth to death. Everybody needs that, not just some people. And as long as they don't have access to that, you're going to have trouble. I want to say this. Now, I have to think about what I'm about say. That all human beings behave lawfully, that is, in accordance with natural law and the primal factors that shape their behavior. So if a person's brought up that doesn't care about anybody else, seems to be a serial killer, all of that is due to the particular, unique environment that that individual grows up in. In other words, there are no good or bad people. There are different environments, like the headhunters of the Amazon. It's normal in that environment to hunt heads. If you were to walk into that environment and say that, doesn't it bother you to have 10 shrunken heads? The native might say, yes, it does. My brother has 20. Do you understand?
Yes.
When the Christians were being fed to lions in Rome, and all the families used to go to watch Christians being fed to lions, and the children said, Daddy, can I come next week to see Christians being fed to lions? You see, this isn't that children are bad or people are good or bad, but the culture imparts a value system.
Yeah,
is it a right and normal?
Right, you have a good point there. I know... A lot of discussions and philosophy about evil and bad, evil and good. A lot of people think, well, that's inherently evil. Well, if you go, and they, at the same time, they think we're wonderful human beings, and we live in a wonderful world. And so I ask them, I say, well, if you were a cow in a feeder lot in Amarillo, you would probably think that the human being was pretty evil because they're going to eat you. And everything's relative. You're right.
Jerry, look, it's very difficult for people to step out of the culture they've been immersed in. You understand? It's very difficult. This motion picture will show how we get to be the way we are, how we get to be creative or lazy or all of those labels that we have today. Whenever you hear the term democracy and freedom, watch out. There never has been a democracy unless you have equal access to education, health care, good food, nutritious food. You cannot have a democracy. It never did exist. For example, George Washington had a whole slew of slaves, which is not in our history books. So history is written by the victors. In other words, I don't think we're like the history books of the future. We're so poorly advanced, except technically. Technically, we are moving forward, but socially, very backward.
Yeah, it seems like we're almost going backwards at the same time we're going forward.
Technically, yes.
William, when we come back, I want to talk to you about... I'm going to take a break, but when I come back, I want to talk to you about... Do you think a movie can really change it?
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we'll be right back in a minute. I'm Jerry Pippin.